The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. We're open line through to one. Call 66 13 68. Text 166 177. WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Just been checking the webcams. It has been throwing it down in Peel recently, and apparently the showers are coming down in Ramsey at the moment. But apparently it's going to get better. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Of course, we're all now been put off until later on today for the racing, and the new evening schedule has been announced following the wet weather today. Roads are going to close between 6 and no later than 9:30. The mountain road's closing at 5. Super Twin race now, over three laps from 20 to 8, a solo warm-up lap at 6:30, and a sidecar shakedown at 6:45. The Superstock TT race one, which was expected to take place today, has now been dropped. So we keep our fingers crossed for the weather. We're always at the mercy of the weather in TT, and up until now it's been kind of okay. What do you think of the buses so far? The busiest route on the Kenyon, drop me a note in. Hello, Kenyon. The busiest bus route on the whole island this week, the number three between Douglas and Ramsey. So what's Bus Vanin do? Single-decker buses, absolutely packed. Bus van has got double-decker buses. Surely they would have made plans to use those buses. If you have been using the buses, how's it been for you? Has it been okay? Actually, we went out and spoke to people. Some people have praised the bus service on the Isle of Man. Bus van is running a ticket office on Lord Street during the fortnight. Imagine that, a ticket office. We put a Manx Radio microphone in front of some of the visitors.
Well, I came in this morning. I flew in. I booked a taxi from there to the hotel, but I now know the buses. There's plenty of them, and they're very frequent, so I'll probably use those in future. I'm here for 3 days, so I bought this travel car, £20, 3 days. I'm going to go out to Ramsey now and do a bit of exploring, and I'll make good use of it, I think.
So we our first trip, and we're going to Peel. Can't wait. 55 minutes on a bus looking at the scenery. It's going to be lovely.
Do you think it's value for money?
Ask me afterwards. It looks like it will be.
It's been pretty good. I've had to rely on the buses and the trains, and I've used all of them. I got it like a 5-day pass, that sort of thing, which seemed to be pretty good value. Once you come to grips with the schedule, it's pretty straightforward.
You've been using the buses?
All the time. Absolutely brilliant.
Do you think it's value for money?
Very much so. Very good service.
Where do you come from in the UK?
North Wales.
And what's the bus service like there?
No idea. Never used one.
Yeah?
Only on this island.
I come from Cornwall.
And how are you finding getting around the Isle of Man?
Absolutely great. The bus services are wonderful. We bought a bus pass so we can go anywhere we want to go. Great value for money, really. The bus drivers are all great, great help, so it's good.
How does this service compare to the buses you have back home?
I don't use the buses back home because they're not very good.
Buses can be a bit of a struggle. We're trying to get to the opposite end of Isle of Man, so try to get a Derby to see the Motor Museum. Struggling a little bit.
John, what, just trying to work out which bus is which?
Yeah, which ones to jump on and off.
I found it amazing. Yeah, I've never known a better set of bus drivers. They're so helpful and friendly, it's unreal. They're great in Yorkshire, but this is, above the bar, really.
My name's Dawn Taylor. I have a really lovely job of looking after the tourists here in TT. Basically, what we're doing is providing a service at Lord Street, which just helps customers get out and about, make sure that they find where they want to go, sell them tickets so it's nice and easy. I know when I go abroad and I don't necessarily speak the language, I know that sometimes it can be a bit challenging even to pronounce some of our names. So to get out and about and to have a smiley face and someone to welcome you along that journey just makes a load of difference.
All right, that's Dawn, and who's on duty at Lord Street. If you're using the buses, how do you feel about them? They seem to have been putting more on, but the service between Ramsey and Douglas, any thoughts on that? Maggie said, how about better public transport serving the airport last Saturday. We arrived off a direct flight. It took us as long to get home to Peel using the bus as it did to fly home from Malaga. I'm not laughing, Maggie. Any thoughts on this? And following what happened last Friday with the I can't believe it's not a parking ban at the airport, I got a note in from, let me see, it was Martin, who just said, what a farce and no surprise that it's Department of Infrastructure down at the airport. So let's get it sorted out. And, well, who knows what's going to happen now? Because, of course, at the moment, you are allowed to stop off there. You're allowed to stop off and pick up and what have you. We'll see what happens. Something surely will happen in the future. Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
How you doing? You all right?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just thinking the politicians were on there about a month ago, weren't they, for South Douglas, Clare Christian and Maltby. And I was just thinking to myself, there's nowhere actually to sit, especially when it rains in South Douglas. I think it was a Douglas 2000 who made a mock of it. It was just a slight complaint, nothing special.
When you say sit, do you mean public seats?
Yeah, that's correct.
Where do you think they should be? Whereabouts in South Douglas?
Well, at the moment, if you go along the quay and it rains, all the seats get wet and there's nowhere to actually sit. If you go to where the pubs are, Spill the Beans, there's nowhere to sit there. And it, as I said, Douglas 2000 made a mock of it. You can't really sit there for long. And then if you've got anywhere near the sea terminal, then, well, I wouldn't go there, to be honest with you. But I'd probably say it's on the north side of there. You've just got a place to stand, haven't you?
Was there anywhere in the past to sit?
Well, you could probably... if you really wanted to go to Tesco and sit down there, you probably could do. But I don't know if Tesco food is available now, so I don't know.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that, Robert. Thanks for being with us today. And also more notes in about the airport. And this is, thank you, Leo. Thank you, Leo, who just said what they were trying to do at the airport was stopping loved ones meeting and greeting as well. But surely this comes on the back of the fact that they put those awful stickers in the arrival hall to cover them. And now you can't see anybody. Not only can you not see people who are coming off the plane and greet people through the glass, but they can't see you. For a few paltry £1,000, they've ruined part of... Well, that's been going on for years, Leo, I understand, but whether or not they'll ever get rid of those stickers, which I think at the time, didn't they try and say it was because of security? Let's face it, it's because of money. They sold the advertising in the arrivals hall, and now what used to be a thrill to see people actually coming in to collect their bags, and they could see you. Children could see parents and grandparents. You could greet people coming back. Doesn't happen, really. So the airport has kind of gone downhill, some people say, in that interest, in that you can't see people. Then there was the kind of ball of confusion that happened last Friday with that parking lane. And the app, which I'm not encouraging you to circumvent, but Blodwyn did say you just go into the airport car park. You don't have to go on the app. Just sit there. And if anybody comes with a high-vis vest, just drive out and drive around again. Because some people are saying, what happens if you're not tech-savvy and if you haven't got the app? Well, if you haven't got the app, really, strictly speaking, you shouldn't be there. It's like that. Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Well, very well, thanks. I'm watching the weather.
Speaking of buses, I've sent you an email, a couple of emails, on a dark grey single-decker that's plying the route along the south of the island recently, which is an electric Mercedes eCitaro electric bus.
How long is it? When was this there? When was it?
I spotted it about an hour and a half ago, so I had the phone with me, so I took a couple of pickies, and
Has it got Manx plates on?
No, English plate, but it was showing that it was going on the number two route between Port St. Mary and Onchan. Let's hope that it's got enough of a 68-mile range, I think it was, the last time we spoke, when we were checking up on how long those batteries last on those things. Although that was to Ramsey, I think, from Douglas. So I don't know if it's any hillier to go from Douglas to Ramsey on the coast road than it is to go from Port St Mary to Douglas. I'm not sure about that. Fisher's Hill, Richmond Hill. Mm. I'd like to comment on a letter on page 14 of this morning's Examiner newspaper from an anonymous author titled "Referendum, an Act of Sabotage." The letter says that the Chief Minister is attempting to pull off an act of pure political sabotage regarding the assisted dying bill by calling for a referendum. The author of the letter also says, and I quote, "To this end, he's throwing a spanner in the works at the 11th hour and throwing up in the air all the detailed forensic thought and planning which has already in good faith been undertaken by his own colleagues." Now, when this author uses the word forensic thought, it causes me to raise a couple of questions, Andy. When I spoke to the Assisted Dying Committee Chairman, David Ashford, recently on your show, he told me regarding the costs of assisted dying, and I'll quote what he said, "As far as I'm aware, there's been no calculation done. Also, Dr. Allinson has not been clear as to the process that will be used to end someone's life using assisted dying. Now, assisted dying in jurisdictions without a euthanasia pathway like Canada, Holland and Belgium, which use lethal injection, always have to use a toxic cocktail ingested by swallowing. So correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but if we're talking about forensic thought, Tynwald and the people of the Isle of Man have no clear idea how people's lives will be ended and also no idea what the costs are that are involved. And we've talked about Dignitas recently at 10,000. So how can we vote on a bill either by Tynwald or by the people in a referendum if neither of those two crucial facts are known?
We've asked, I mean, I've asked, many people have asked for granular detail of, and it sounds morbid to talk about it, but, you know, what exactly would happen, as you say, whether it was to ingest something, to take some pills, some deadly pills, or to have a cannula in that you just turned on and what have you. So nobody quite knows. And many people get distressed by this detail, but as you say, we don't actually know. We don't know whether it's Manx Care that's going to do it, a third party, an arm's length, if you like, another arm's length company could do it, or whether or not we'd contract in somebody to do it. We don't actually know. We don't know the number of people that they think. I think Dr. Allinson, didn't he estimate between 4 and 9 people per year he reckoned would use it?
Yeah, but when you actually look at the jurisdictions that have really gone for it, because there's quite a few jurisdictions around the world, but if you look at Canada, they're approaching 10%. So at 900 a year on the island that pass away, you'd have 90.
10% of what? 10% of what, Julian?
The 900 people that pass away every year on the island, that's the statistic that are from the Isle of Man government.
Right.
So that would indicate if we go somewhere near Canada, it would be 90. Belgium and Holland are somewhere between 6 and 7%. So, you know, you're looking somewhere a little bit less, but something similar. So a lot more than 6 to 9.
So you're saying in Canada, 10% of people who die in Canada use assisted dying?
Yeah.
Where's that figure from?
I mean, I think that's from their own, that's from their MAID data. I think when they started off, it was somewhere around about 1,100 people, and now it's over 13,000 a year now in each, I think in 2023 it was 13,000. So and of course we've had recently, there are people in Canada, and also we've had Zareya Tabeek and Yolanda Fun in Belgium and Holland.
So how do you view the, and remember, the chief minister, sorry, let's refer to him, he's the constituency MHK for Aaron Michael, because he went to pains to stress that this isn't a government matter, it's a parliamentary matter, and he was raising that private, if you like, the referendum amendment as a constituency MHK. What do you think's behind this?
I don't know, but I don't think it's fair on... It's Alf Cannon, you know, we know who he is. I don't think it's fair on Alf to be throwing this kind of, you're trying to throw a spanner in the works because they've done their forensic work. No idea how much it costs, no idea how it's going to be done. And that's not fair on anybody, including the people that are in dignity and dying. You know, if we don't know how this is going to be done, he needs to be clear on this.
Right.
And, you know, this forensic thought about, you know, the costing. I mean, is this why we're in such a mess with the ferry terminal? How much forensic thought went into the costing of the ferry terminal and also the extra $6 million because they haven't measured the boat up properly for the harbour?
I think everybody's got an opinion on that, Julian. But to get back to I mean, surely if there were to be a referendum, and presumably now we're only 2 and a bit years away from a general election, if there were to be a referendum, surely there would be all sorts of leaflets and, you know, government media releases, and politicians would talk about it in exhaustive detail. Surely they wouldn't leave us in the dark.
Oh, and I noticed there hasn't also been a proper public forum where we've got, you know, something like a question time where we can actually ask these questions and get a proper answer. Because the man in line is great, but... You know, it's one person comes on like me, and then you'll get somebody come on later with a counter. But as far as I'm aware, Dr. Allison has not been clear on how this is going to be done. And, you know, we've got the chair of the committee on assisted dying saying there has been no calculation on the cost. So I'm not judging anything about anything, but how can you vote on a bill if you don't know those two things?
So do you think possibly they're just trying to get agreement in principle and sort the detail out afterwards?
That's no way to conduct legislation.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll see. Julian, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right, 23 minutes past 12. Is there any reason that road closures, says L on 535, any reason that road closures are no longer published in the public notices in the press on the Alamo? I thought they had to be publicised. They're in the TT News in an edition of The Independent, but not an official notice. Along the same line, there's been no public notice advising of the TT fireworks for the past 2 years, says L. I think they are getting around that by saying that it is put online and that it's available. I don't think, and certainly not, there aren't as many, well, not a quarter of the number of public notices there used to be in the newspapers. That was, if you like, the newspaper's form of subvention from the government, in that they were the only game in town and they carried all the public notices. And sadly, that's a loss of hundreds of thousands of pounds for the local newspapers, in that a lot of those public notices simply don't go in the press. That's the way of the world now, with the internet being as it is. I'm sitting inside at the rain, looking at the rain in Ramsey, looking for some sunshine. Thanks for that. And, you know, thank you, Julian. I've just got your photo of the E-Sitaro in Port Erin. Thanks for that. Just come through. It is still throwing it down in Ramsey. Bus drivers and staff are great, says Richard on 488. But can we have the ticket information cabin at Lord Street all the time? And more double-deckers on busy routes and times, i.e. the late buses between Douglas and Peel, Port Erin and Ramsey, says Richard. Well, I don't think, I'll just venture to suggest, I don't think that ticket information cabin at Lord Street will survive after TT. Just a thought. What a shambles, his Francis on 762. The parking at the grandstand is, I'm a blue badge holder, yet limited space is available, and the security staff I found are rude and unhelpful and couldn't care less. I'm told all MHKs have parking permits at the door. We don't know that, Francis, but thanks for that. And Eric called up today, yesterday, didn't he, to mention that there were only 12 disabled parking spaces in the Nobles Park bit of that. Funny, isn't it? Says 490. All of a sudden, there's a ticket office for the TT, and the railway line near the wildlife park has been cut back and flattened a bit to allow a bit of access. Keep it up for the rest of the year, chaps. There are other people here when the visitors have gone. I think it's obvious that no one else matters. Nothing else matters apart from the TT on 490. There were seats under the villa and in between the gardens years ago. I agree with Ron, says Liz. Bring back the seats. Thanks also to, if you don't have the app for the, this is 762 again, the app for the airport, or more to the point, afford an internet compliant phone that isn't a form of discrimination, says 762. To those non-tech savvy or those who don't have to live by their means. 762. The matter of assisted dying is complex. There's a big difference between assisted dying and assisted suicide. So, says Mal, don't confuse the two. Thank you, Mal, on 638. Where does it state you must have the app to use the airport car park? I think it's a dictatorship, if that's what the airport is demanding, and a final nail in the coffin for the freedom of choice, says Southern Andy. So, 653 dropped a note in to say 10% of people who die a year get to choose when they die. So what is the problem, says 653. Give people a choice over their own bodies, and this statistic is clearly wrong, as it's 10% of the people who have a terminal diagnosis. They need to sort out the connection after crossing the bridge at St Ninian's to get home in Willesden. On all occasions, there's never been a bus on the other side to continue the journey home, says 706. If you've got any thoughts on the buses and how things are going, then by all means do get in touch. And lots of messages to get through. I think the airport is poorly run. It's anti-passenger. And the issue at the airport, says 663, is not security fault at all. It's the public who've refused to comply with a request to move vehicles, resulting in abuse and threats made to security. It's a disgrace by the public. Airport security, I think, says 653, do a great job. And reference the cash machine. By the way, is the cash machine in Port Erin working now? Garth said it runs out of money all the time. I've got to go to the airport to use that Alabank bank cash machine to transfer money and then take money out as well. And again, 762, if you don't have a smartphone app, how do you use the airport car park? Well, it appears you just have to go in and not do anything. Why don't they use the Peggy mobile bank if the Port Erin cash machine isn't working? The government, again, needs to spend some money on the Ronaldsway Airport frontage, says 262. They need to redevelop the front of the airport so the drop-off and pick-up can be done. And the taxi drivers' area can also be developed to help them too. Reintroduce the correct parking attendance, how it used to be, and stop people taking advantage. Does this go back, they say, to 2019, which is when the airport police were withdrawn? And the unwarranted officers, as it were there. But there are some parking wardens there at the moment. I just wonder how much authority they've actually got. Unfortunately, I think our airport, this is 470, I think our airport is outdated now. The government should have thought about this before building a new ferry terminal and buying a new vessel. How long is it going to be before some money is spent on Ronaldsway? 470. So remember, you don't need the app to use the airport car park. There are big signs with telephone numbers to use and others' advice regarding parking. Dewan on 715. You can call to do this. As though the Port Erin cash machine apparently is waiting for spares to arrive, says L, who's in on the inn on 535. So, the buses doing well at the moment. Department of Enterprise has been defending its plans for the year ahead and highlighting achievements over the past year. They aim to develop a national air services policy, advance artificial intelligence initiatives, finalise the delayed local economy strategy, and create 800 new private sector jobs. They've had some criticism from that political alliance, claiming there's a lack of substance, and those at the top have been too quick to praise their efforts. What do you think about it? Text, email, call, and WhatsApp. Marking their own homework, would you say? And also, this question of the expensive burgers. I don't know whether you've been to the Grand Star or indeed round the course about how much stuff is costing nowadays. TT organisers say they're conscious of how much it costs for fans to visit and attend the festival, and some people are just saying, expressing concerns about the cost of food available around the grandstand. Mark Lewin is the chief officer for Department of Enterprise, of course, DOI, or the motorsport part within the Department for Enterprise, runs the TT. Mark Lewin responded to claims that some people are being charged £25 for a burger.
I've certainly seen one of those similar stories posted. I think, you know, there's a lot of people go up to around that whole area, the fan park. Thousands of people every day go up, and thousands of them enjoy a wide range of food and drink. I heard that claim. I don't think it quite stacks up. I don't think anyone would recognise £25 for a simple burger. But when you buy lots of things and you buy them all together as a large meal for a number of people, then no matter where you are, then there is a price to pay. But let's go back to thousands of people attend, thousands of people have an amazing time and really enjoy it. And there's a whole range of Isle of Man producers, Isle of Man businesses, as well as some specialist providers that go to many of these type events.
Any thoughts on this? A note also in from somebody who said if people are complaining about how much refreshments are costing around the TT, they need to go to a Formula One meeting and see how much you get charged there. If the Isle of Man TT is a world-class event, surely people understand you have to pay for that. There can't really be a race for the bottom, and we can't make the TT a bargain bucket event. Thank you for Les, who dropped that note in. Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good day to you, Andy and listeners. I was just had a few moments and managed to log on and look at your news website. I'm aghast at this story about the DHSC doesn't have documents which confirms it can restrict access to the roundhouse.
Well, that freedom of information was put in, and as you say, they can't find evidence of legislation there. So, what do you think?
So, well, I'm reading the bit then that says recaps of Braddon commissioners were served with a 28-day notice. Okay, so one has to presuppose that the minister, Mr. Laurie Hooper, was aware of that notice being issued, which now transpires has no basis in law. Therefore, Mr. Hooper should either, well, may come on your programme now and defend why he authorised that to be issued, or, I think, should resign forthwith.
Well, something seems amiss. Something seems not quite to stack up. Have you got any Mr. opinion Hooper, what it is?
Yeah, Mr. Hooper is in charge of that department, and if the department issued that notice, then he must have been aware of it, should have signed off on it, and no legal basis, so therefore must surely resign forthwith. That's all I have to say on that.
All right. I appreciate that, Andrew. Thanks for calling us today. You can spot this story, by the way, at manxradio.com. Go onto the news site. This is a Freedom of Information request. Has revealed that the DHSC doesn't have the documents which confirms it can restrict access to the roundhouse. This is the story that goes on of the Braddon Roundhouse. Way over budget. It's open now. Fine-looking building. But they say they don't have the documents confirming they can restrict vehicle access to the roundhouse. Remember, they were trying to stop people going because they thought that if too many people park, it would affect access and vehicular access to the hospital. So the local Democracy Reporting Service submitted this freedom of information. The department's not been able to provide evidence of the legislation the department is using to stop people going to the centre. Braddon commissioners, as Andrew said, was served with a 28-day notice in March to halt vehicles from going to the roundhouse, an exception made for staff, and the dispute is just ongoing. DHSC said the land's owned privately, and there's a public record of proof of ownership available. But this story just goes on and on and on, and nobody nobody quite seems to know where it's going to end. A note in from Elsie. Hello, Elsie. She just said, I've heard nothing more about that counterfeit cash that was going around the Isle of Man. Has anything else been said about it? Elsie, no, nothing has been said. It was the back end of last month, I think it was a week and a bit ago, when the constabulary warned us there was the possibility of counterfeit currency being used on the Isle of Man. You're asked to check particularly UK English £20 notes. And the serial number, Elsie, you asked for it, is BB875081178. So look for £20 notes, BB875081178. And if you come across them, if you've been past one of those, then by all means get in touch with police. So it's BB875081178 if you could. Peter's on now. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hello, Andy. It's Peter Murcott here. First of all, I do have great sympathy for the fact that you get this subject, which I'm going to talk about, which is not the bestest of subjects, and then unfortunately you're landed with it. It would have been far better, and I have said this to Manx Radio, if we had another radio debate, quite apart from Man in Line, which isn't the best medium for being able to talk about the question of the assisted suicide bill, which we had before the bill ever came out. And we had a very courteous debate. I was on it. There were two of us against the proposed bill, two in favour. Nobody interrupted anybody. Nobody talked over anyone, such as you sometimes get on national radio. We were all very, very polite, and we all had the opportunity to state our case, which is, to me, the civilised way to conduct a debate. I don't think the Man in Line's the best medium, but it's the only one we've got, unfortunately, unless Manx Radio chooses to have another debate. Now we have the bill, so we can talk from direct information on the bill. And that leads me on to the second point. A lot of the comments that are made about this, I notice that they do not support what they say by reference to the bill. Like, for example, you've read a thing out today saying assisted dying and assisted suicide are two very different things, but they don't support it by reference to what the actual law says. Now, I always do, and I've consistently pointed out right from before the time when the bill was introduced and since it's been introduced, I said, going back, that if you were going to pass a bill like that, or have a bill before the House of Keys, called assisted dying if you wish, but it would be assisted suicide, and it would be necessary in the bill to put a clause in that showed that as long as the proposed law's dictates were followed to the letter, there would not be a possibility of a charge of aiding and abetting, counselling, procuring a suicide. And so it's in clause 10, just as I said it would be. Now, if it's nothing to do with assisted suicide, the first question that has to be asked, and nobody's asked it, is what's that provision doing there then? Because it actually says abetment of suicide. That's the heading to it. Now, I pointed that out every single time. Sometimes people will airily say, oh, well, that's your opinion. That sounds awfully clever when they say that. But it isn't as clever as people think it is, because it isn't an opinion when something's on a piece of paper. It's a fact. And it is a fact that that is down as clause 10. Now, we had another statement made on Manx Radio saying that a doctor will always have to be present at the time of when the death takes place. They obviously haven't studied the bill. The bill doesn't say that. It's possible that they could be present, because when you look at the procedure, which I think is in clause 7, at the start of it, at the attending doctor's discretion, he can provide so that certain other people can take the substance, which is quaintly called the medicine in the bill at the moment, and it can be another GP, but it doesn't have to be, because the alternatives are, they call them the assisted health professional. They could be a pharmacist or it could be a registered nurse. And so the bill doesn't actually insist that there's got to be a doctor. If people took the trouble to, again, reference what they say against not opinion, but against hard fact, if they looked at the order paper for the House of Keys, they would find there is an amendment due to go to the bill whereby it will be necessary, whoever else is there, to have a qualified registered general practitioner in the place where the death takes place. That is not necessarily a legal requirement now. Else, why would two MHKs, I won't mention who they are, although I know who they are, why would they be moving that amendment? It would be not necessary because they would be moving an amendment that wouldn't make any difference to what the proposed bill already says. And so you've got this problem about this referendum. That's why I'm against it, because you would have such uninformed decisions being taken where people wouldn't have a clue as to what the law said. They'd have a lot of hearsay. They'd have a lot of accusations against people like me saying, oh, well, that's just his opinion, and all that sort of silly, airy-fairy nonsense that is said quite regularly when people, quite frankly, have lost the argument. But they wouldn't have hard fact, which I've tried to present, and which, of course, Julian does as well. He presents hard facts, but most people aren't in receipt of those hard facts. So that's really the position. It is an assisted suicide bill. It's also a euthanasia bill. That was never intended, but when the Keys gave the leave for it to be introduced, but it somehow has managed to get in there, and there is a move to actually take that provision out again by an amendment, and that is a fact which will be on the order paper when they resume. Again, if you look about it, it's expanded already, because even the mover of the bill wanted 6 months on a terminal illness, and nowhere, incidentally, a lot of the discussion that takes place is about the unbearable suffering that people have had, but that is not anywhere. You can read from the bill from cover to cover, and you'll not see that mentioned. And so already the criteria are very much looser than they were at the start of in Holland, Belgium and Canada. And so you've got the scope of the number of people who will avail themselves obviously increasing. They've now increased the 6 month period to 12, and it's anybody's guess how many people, if ever this dreadful piece of legislation gets passed, it's anybody's guess how many will avail themselves of it. But I would suggest that what Julian has already said is what's happened in Canada and, of course, the other countries. It will be an expansive situation. And remember the other point, which again is a fact, not my opinion, that the legislature on May the 17th, 2023, unanimously said they wanted to engage in a strategy and to support it financially that would make suicide a thing of the past, which was excellent and couldn't be faulted in the things they said. And it's partly, I think, because of this, that this fiction has come that there is some difference between this bill and assisted suicide, because they know full well that once you concede that, then they've conceded something which is an impossible situation, that you're having public money spent on aiding and abetting a suicide, and you're having public money spent on trying to make suicide a thing of the past.
And just to be clear, yep. I mean, Dr. Allenson has, and other people have said there is no way that any secondary legislation could be bolted onto this afterwards if it were to be introduced. Do you think that's correct?
I'd have to have a look again about the secondary legislature. I wouldn't like to say that off the top of my head, because I only make statements. I would have to get the bill out and I would have to read it. I got the impression, certainly there's a possibility for secondary legislation with regard to rules and regulations as to how the bill would be conducted, you know, rules and regulations concerning I think, to do with the means of the person dying. And there's other areas. I know I've read that. If the move of the bill means about the criteria for eligibility as opposed to some practical things, I can't recall seeing any way in which those could be altered. So I would suggest that he, without reading it again, that's probably correct if you're talking about the fact that can they, for example, can they alter by secondary legislation the eligibility for this, what I'm going to call correctly assisted suicide? No, I don't think there is a possibility of that being done by secondary legislation. If you're talking about the practical means of implementing that which the bill already permits, yes, there is secondary legislation, but that wouldn't affect the scope of the bill, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the mover of the bill is correct on that.
So,
and I wouldn't disagree with that.
Just one point, Peter, and again, yep. these terms, assisted dying and assisted suicide, as you say, assisted suicide is mentioned in the bill. Some people say that by mentioning the word suicide, it's a provocative term. Other people say, people who are against the bill, say assisted dying is a euphemism. So where do you stand on those two definitions?
Well, quite simply, the title of a bill makes not an atom of difference as to what its legal effect is. I used to teach, well, amongst other things, this area of law about what we call statutory interpretation. The only time that the title is ever used by the courts is if you have a provision in a bill, a clause, what it would become a section once it's in law, if you have some wording that is highly ambiguous and very uncertain as to what it means, the courts will sometimes, just to try and clarify what they think that word means, they will look at the short title to see if that throws any light on it. But at the end of the road, it's always a fact that when the courts are interpreting the law, that if the short title doesn't throw any light on it, then they will disregard it. It's just a nickname. As far as the bill goes, there isn't any obscurity about it. It is quite clear that the bill is about primarily about assisted suicide for the reasons that I've given. Because if in the bill, by the bill, A, who are certain people, is under certain circumstances entitled to provide B, who has made the request for the facilities under the bill, with the means whereby B can kill himself. Now, if A does that normally, and there'd be no argument in a court of law if it arose, that would constitute the criminal offence of aiding, abetting, counselling or procuring a suicide of another, which is a criminal offence carrying 14 years imprisonment. There's no argument then that what is happening there is that a person is assisting another person to kill himself. If B kills himself and does so intentionally and knows what he's doing, then B is committing suicide. And if A gives him and goes to the house or wherever B happens to be, takes the necessary means for B to kill himself, B is helping. I'm putting it in layman's language. B is helping him or assisting him to commit suicide. The fact that the title, which is just like a nickname, makes not an atom of difference. You could call it the Robertson's Marmalade Bill if you wanted to. I know they wouldn't. That would not make any difference whatsoever.
All right.
In what it is, and it's a silly argument for people to raise, and they can do it till they're blue in the face.
All right.
They do not change the legal reality.
I appreciate
anyway, there you are, Andy.
All right, appreciate your call. Thanks, Peter.
Okay, thanks, then.
All right, 9:59.
Discover a fabulous range of watches, gifts, and jewellery at Ramsey Art Gallery with top brand watches from Bulova, Citizen Eco Drive, and Storm to Acuras, Seconda, and Timex. Plus, all watch purchases come with free lifetime watch bracelet adjustment. investment service. There's stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions, and of course a fabulous gallery of limited edition prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers, opposite Ramsey RNLI Shop.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorials skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
The Loganair summer sale is now on. Fly from Isle of Man Airport and save up to 15% off over 1 million seats across the Loganair network. Book by the 5th of June, travel from the 28th of June. Subject to availability, exclusions apply. Visit loganair.co.uk. Loganair, your journey, our joy.
The Ginger Hall has it all. Check out the new restaurant, now open at the Ginger Hall Hotel, where you'll find a fantastic range of food, from classic winter warmer bistro-style dishes to delicious Sunday specials and great celebration meals. Don't delay. Book now on 897231 or visit our Facebook page for all our opening times, pictures and full menus. You'll even find details on our live music and more. The Ginger Hall really does have it all.
Tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock, join Kiri Kumar and myself, Simon Clark, for another Countryside programme.
We hear from farmer Jim Cayley, who's setting up for the Eastern Young Farmers sheep shearing on Sunday.
I popped along to mixed farmer David Brew at Ballakinnig Farm in Smale to find out how he was finding prices at the moment for stock and also how the haylage or silage crops were coming along up the north of the island.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock. And don't forget, you can download and subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fastamite, lots of messages, including follow-up from last week. We talked about Summerland, also what was happening at the airport with the parking restrictions, but also housing as well. The housing issue, says Ian, especially social housing, has been a concern for 30 years on the Isle of Man. It appears The Ponzi scheme, this is Ian's word, that economic population increase has been the catalyst for the administration to kick into gear. And Mark dropped a note in saying, talking property prices in isolation of other factors, I think is narrow-minded. I bought my first house on the island in 1993. It was in Farm Hill, cost £50,000. I was earning £5,000 a year at the time, so it was a 10 times multiplier factor. Today, my daughter, same age as I was then, earns about £25,000, and you can buy a decent small house on the Isle of Man for £250,000, which is a 10 times multiplier. Banks use the multiplier ratio when calculating affordability, so stop focusing on price and look at the real world factors, i.e. earnings ratio, says Mark. Housing costs aren't uniquely a Manx problem, but when you take into account the overall entertainment offering, it's no surprise most young people would choose to live in the UK. It's ridiculous that we can't even have a modern, decent cinema. We need 100,000 people target to entice the brands to the Isle of Man. Get a Nando's here, says this correspondent, and see how busy that would be, and then it also brings second-hand benefits as well. Well, this new development that's going to be on the Lord Street bus station is promising a four-screen multiplex for the Isle of Man. So quite that, what that would do to the other cinemas on the Isle of Man. The Palace has got two screens. The Broadway has got one screen. Perhaps that will be the end for them if a four-screen multiplex were to appear on Lord Street. There are also kind of cinema club offerings around the Isle of Man, certainly at the Erin Arts Centre, at the Centenary Centre. So we come back to the whole point that a lot of entertainment venues have closed down on the Isle of Man. That's not happening to the Isle of Man in isolation. When people talk about the fact that Douglas used to have 12 nightclubs and now it's probably got a couple, that really isn't restricted to the Isle of Man, certainly across the UK, certainly in England. the majority of nightclubs have closed down. That's due to many things. It's due to the change in licensing hours for pubs. It's also due to the fact that alcohol is available in just about every supermarket and store that you can go to. So many people aren't going to nightclubs, certainly not at 10 o'clock at night as they used to. So quite how we get the entertainment offering up on the Isle of Man, well, we'll see. I also got a note in from Will, who just said, on Manx Radio, I heard recently some government properties that were up for sale. What are they? The DOI says there are several areas of Jerby Industrial Estate available for development on a ground lease basis, if you're interested. The Peel Food Park, 8.5 acres of prime agricultural land at Rock Mountain, German. Ground leases for development plots at the Airport Technology Gateway, Ronaldsway Industrial Estate, to you and me. A counter and offices up for grabs in the Airport Terminal Building, formerly it was premium parking, in the east of the Isle of Man, for £4,800 an annum plus VAT. You can get the Dune Kiosk Cafe. If you're interested in putting some money into the government and furthering your own opportunities, go to gov.in. So, £4,800 per annum plus VAT for the Dune Kiosk Cafe. How's your coffee making skills? That's it for Man in Line today. Back with another open line tomorrow, thanks to Howie Kane on the phones today.
WINT